Tuesday, July 16th, was one of those busy days when I really pay for my leisurely weekend hours on the boat or days of riding at the ranch. I was up early before 7, had a session with Bess Abel in the early morning, an hour and a half or so, on appointments, parties, mail. And then, at 11:30, to the Jacqueline Kennedy Garden, where the grapes are hanging in fat green clusters under the arbor. They should be purple in a couple of weeks. And we did the recording for the opening of the trip to the Hudson Valley. It was sound on film. And we really worked for an hour and a half on what will be only a few moments on the screen. I interrupted it once to go into the doctor's office with Linda to get acquainted with Dr. Lonergan, whom I found a very pleasant, matter-of-fact man. Breezy, middle-aged, likable. Best of all, there seems to be a good accord between him and Linda. At one, famished, I had lunch with Linda in her room, and she said, almost casually, "Guess who I heard from? Chuck Robb." And somewhere deep within me, I let out a sigh of relief that had been pent up for 3 weeks. I thought first of Lyndon. I hoped she'd told him. Yes, she had. He knows how part of his mind is always on Chuck and Patrick. About 1:30, Mary Lasker came. She and Marvin Watson and Nash Castro and I met in the Yellow Oval Room to talk about stamps, Mary's lists of enthusiasms, her avenues of how government can help do good things is endless. I had provided her with a plate of sandwiches and all of us with some iced tea. She'd been up on the hill for a hearing and hadn't had a moment for lunch, and I had been too starved to wait. Her ammunition was a stamp album, her own, which shows beautiful stamps of other countries, some quite small and unimportant countries in Africa or islands in the Pacific, that make a sizable part of their government income from stamps beautifully done and sold to, is it philatelist? Anyhow, experts that collect stamps. Quite a business, it seems. And the additional ammunition was a group of lovely photographs and drawings of a beautifully designed and planted highway, lupins and poppies along a California road, and bluebonnets on a stretch of farm-to-market road, a picture that I had sent Mary. She hoped three things. First, that we could make some of our stamps larger. Second, that we might try having some of them photographic rather than engraved. Third, that we could emphasize beautification, environment, conservation in one or two more stamps before this administration says goodbye. In Washington, it seems that you are always trying to convince somebody of something. You're trying to sell an idea. We had the amazing and novel experience of finding that the man we wanted to sell was not an opponent, but an ally. The Postmaster General met us more than halfway. Yes, he had been looking into stamps. He hoped they could be larger. He presented some of the reasons why it was difficult. For instance, stamp packaging and dispensing machines were built for a certain size. He also thought we might explore making some photographic ones. Best of all, he had already planned, and I think nailed down, doing a series of stamps on conservation. So there could be one on urban conservation, some beautification project in a big city. His committee had already mentioned Paley Plaza. And there could be one, yes, on highway beautification. And he looked with interest on the two pictures we showed him. Mary accepted his request that she be a member of the Stamp Advisory Committee, and we wound up the meeting by planning another on next Wednesday. Nash phoned John Walker, another committee member, who agreed to attend, and Marvin will bring Mrs. Brizendine, who is the lady we really must sell because she goes on from administration to administration and under many postmaster generals. This is a small thing, but as I look at all the difficulties Lyndon has, and I look back on the 4.5 years, I think it probably would have been better if he had put more of his own men in strategic positions, cabinet positions, not too long after he assumed office, and certainly a great many more after he was inaugurated in January of 65. He had kept many Kennedy men, in fact, in some departments, practically a whole phalanx, I suppose. I could not name all the reasons why. I think partly out of respect for President Kennedy and how he would have wanted someone to treat him under similar circumstances, and partly out of respect for the ability and liking for the men Kennedy had appointed. In many cases, it had worked fine, but there is a certain quality of direct relationship between you and the people you personally have chosen and put into that job that results in a sort of teamwork that does not come from someone who inherited the job from another president. So, in retrospect, a considered course of action might have been changed, and it is only at the very end of this administration that we arrive with our own appointees in certain strategic spots. Next, I worked with Ashton, cleared the desk pretty nearly, and then went into the Lincoln Room for another session on our filming project, this time to go over the April script. Liz and Simone and Tommy Atkins and George Brenholz, who'd written it, Joe France and Irvin Duggan. April is the busiest month of the year. This year, beginning after the paralyzing blow of March the 31st, was a powerful, dramatic, full-to-bursting month. Mr. Brenholz had struggled ably, even poetically, I thought, when trying to condense it into 30 minutes, had given up and stretched to 40, and still, I held out, I'm sure to his disgust sometimes, for some of the things that mean so much to me. Just a moment for my last Senate Ladies' Luncheon on Capitol Hill, and the reception for the 4-H boys and girls, if possible, and the sweet nostalgic party of the putting up of Mrs. Truman's portrait. And then the beautification luncheon, preceded by the bus ride around Washington. I did hope we could have a moment or two of it. The social side, the people side of life in the White House, if not earth-shaking, has drama and pageantry and warmth and meaning. And it's part of the grist that comes to this great mill, just as cabinet meetings and bill signings. I firmly believe we are improving the quality of the film, which is taking the blood out of us. We adjourned exhausted, but I believe with some sense of accomplishment, and I left for my last and most important meeting of the day with Dr. Grover and Dr. Alderson and Dr. Rhodes in the Yellow Oval Room. Dr. Alderson is the architect from Tennessee that Dr. Grover earnestly recommends as head of the Johnson Library. This will be a momentous step. It may set the tone of the library, its growth, its prestige. I am scared. I do not know how to pick such a man, and Lyndon has only moments to devote to it. As I look back on it, the funny thing is that he may have been scared too. Dr. Alderson seemed very nice, pleasing personality, likable. I wish we had for this job a man who is a gung-ho sort of follow me leader type, one foot in academia and one in public relations. Dr. Alderson did not seem as aggressive, as assured as I could wish, but I liked him, and I am ready to go on the recommendation of Dr. Grover and Dr. Rhodes. After brief fishing expedition sort of questions, Ashton brought in word from Lyndon that he'd like us to come over. We went over to his office. It was a brief meeting, and we emerged with the understanding that Dr. Alderson would go with the job. I still felt scared. We went back up to the Truman balcony and had a drink. The intense heat of the day, the heavy slumberous heat that sometimes grips Washington for several days, was lifting, and the Truman balcony was a deliciously pleasant place to be. After they left, I recorded for about an hour and a half, during which Lyndon called me with a suggestion I welcomed so happily. McNamara's had just gotten back to town, but I called them to come over for dinner with Cy Vance, our house guest. I couldn't wait to. Foggy was still in Europe. We were wrong about her returning. But Bob had gotten back, and yes, he'd love to come. So a little before 8, changed into a pretty summer dress because I felt it was a festive evening. I returned to the Truman balcony. Cy came down. And in just a moment, Bob came over. We met and hugged. He looked wonderful and very happy. It was a full 30 minutes before Lyndon arrived, and I greedily used the time to ask the questions I wanted to, because I knew I would have to yield to a more important questioner on more specific today's business. During the rest of the evening, Bob and Margie had had a wonderful time in Egypt. Yes, they had seen the temples at Abu Simbel, and it was fascinating to look down from a plane on the land of Egypt, so unbelievably arid until you came to the Valley of the Nile, which was beautifully green and marvelously fertile. He described going to dinner at the home of one of Nasser's ministers. I believe he might be similar to a minister of finance. And from the terrace of his house, You looked right out straight onto one of the major pyramids, beautifully lighted. As Bob and Margaret held their breath at this fantastic view, one of the guests laughingly asked, "How do you like the way a socialist minister lives?" They had found Nasser interesting and personally attractive. Bob had been to the Aswan Dam. He said the whole course of current history might have been changed if we had gone on with that loan to build the Aswan Dam. And then he cited the figure that the Russians had put into it, and it was a very small figure. Meanwhile, the Suez Canal is closed, a result of the Israeli-Arab War, and that part of the world heats up like a tinderbox. Lyndon came, we lit the candles on the table, we had a delicious dinner. Lindbergh came out and sat with us. The talk ranged around the world. It was the sort of evening for which I will always have gratitude that I have lived in Washington, that I have shared this life, that I have known people like this. They are so intelligent, these two, Si and Bob, and so very good, just plain good. Mm-hmm. And I am intensely glad that the government has the services of men like these. The setting, and as I looked at the Washington Monument and the Jefferson Memorial, I could appreciate the socialist minister's view. The companions, the very significance of the things we talked about, made it a starred evening for me, and there have been many such, and I know